Boom, what is happening? Thank you for listening in. I have a great episode for you. This is Lucy O'Hagan, and she is a primitive skills practitioner. She runs a forest school in the Phoenix Park in Dublin, which is a very interesting project. And she also runs Rites of Passage for young ladies. And she also runs adult classes on primitive skills, which is right in the center of Dublin in the Phoenix Park, which I think is incredible. And I'm going to be attending a couple of those. So had a great conversation with Lucy. I think you'll enjoy it. She had to run off a little early. She didn't have a whole lot of time, so we had to cut it a little bit short. But I think all in all, it was very worthwhile. As always, thank you to the guys at Full Circle Roasters. Best coffee in Ireland. They are pumping it out, doing great work down there, and I appreciate the support. And also to my boys at unitas.life and nootropics brain supplements, coming soon, not quite out yet but on the way, so keep an eye out for those. And this week, thank you from the bottom of my heart to my main man Jack the Jaculate, world champion scratch artist, all-around musical aficionado, who put together this awesome intro tune for me, which I absolutely love. And Jack is a beast at putting tunes together and making music on the fly. I'm so happy with it, and I can't wait for you to hear it. So yes, enjoy. Bam.
Giving away all my best bits. Just what we were talking about.
So I'm here with Lucy O'Hagan.
Yes.
Wild Awake.
Mm-hmm.
Ancestral skills practitioner.
That's me.
And we'll get into all the other stuff that you do.
Yeah.
But maybe first you could tell us just a little bit about yourself and how you got into.
Great.
Ancestral skills, I suppose. And
how long have you got?
A quick overview.
Okay. So, where to begin? So I first of all, I grew up in the countryside. Well, I was born in Belfast. I moved to the countryside. Spent loads of time outdoors. Had a lot of freedom. Most of us can relate to that in our generation. And that was a really huge part of like my childhood and my healing as a child. And then when I got older, like as you do, moved back to Belfast, just wanted to go to punk gigs and drink and kind of got separated from nature a little bit. But plants were always the one thing that kind of were a stronghold for me, because I would brew, you know? So it was like, great, okay, punk and homebrew, and I can go and forage the
as
food.
As in homebrew beer?
Yeah, and wines and things. So like plants were always there for me.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like struggled so much with anxiety and poor self-image and self-harm and eating disorders. And I was really in a lot of pain for a long time.
Yeah.
And came back to nature then. I suppose when I did my forest school training, when I was, it was like 5 years ago now.
Yeah,
5 years ago, did my forest school training, and that reawakened all of that for me. So that was, you know, learning how to facilitate experiences in nature for people and children in particular. And as part of that, we were learning like how to light a fire with a fire steel, how to use a bow saw, how to use a knife, and I just hadn't done that before. You know, I was maybe like 23, 24 year old woman.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know how to use a saw. Like, this isn't on.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then that just flicked something in me. It was like, yeah, I'd found my purpose.
Amazing.
So like off the back of that, I did like a 10 month long bushcraft instructor's course. Did a 9 month long ethnobotany course.
Wow.
Did loads of wildlife track, and did just went to school intensively for
amazing.
A couple of years, and I loved it. But it was like, yeah, like the bushcraft course was still very heavily, I mean, it's a very macho world, right? You know, okay. And it's like there wasn't that nature connection that I really craved.
Okay.
And
you
then
say it's macho. Like, what do you mean it's macho? Like,
yeah. So like, in the,
like, it's all about the skills and the tools and the.
It's about dominance over nature. A lot of it, not all of it, like, for sure. But there's a very kind of like, it's a very male-dominated world.
Okay.
There's a heavy kind of like military undertone and survivalist undertone to a lot of the schools out there. And like, what I want to be able to do is to live with nature, not to take from it and dominate it and like continue this human-centric way of living, you know?
Amazing. Yeah.
So about 2 years into that journey, my now teacher and colleague and friend, a woman called Lynx Vilden, came to Ireland, and she is an ancestral skills teacher she's from the UK, but she teaches in the States. But she teaches all of these skills with community at the heart of it.
Amazing.
So, you know, we were out in Galway building a coracle and learning how to tan fish skins and making fire and doing all of these skills, but also with ceremony at the heart of it, like with Thanksgiving circles, with check-in circles, and kind of realizing that if we don't have the foundational basics of how to live in a community with all like the ups and downs, then really these skills don't mean anything, because you can go into a forest and make a bow drill fire in, you know, 5 minutes, but who the fuck cares, like, if you've got no friends, you know?
Correction, you can go into a forest and make a bow drill in 5 minutes. It takes me like 25.
It's hard, but it's easier.
No, I understand what you're saying.
It's easier together, you know?
And like, obviously I have a military background, and I like have done lots of different bushcraft courses, and I understand exactly what you're saying. It's all like military gear, you know? It's very like, there's a lot of ex-military guys that are into that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, that's nothing against like people who come from that background at all, you know? Like,
no.
I do welcome people like from that background and all backgrounds in my classes, but it just wasn't for me. But I still learned like so much from my teacher there. John Ryder is an incredible naturalist and an incredible tracker. So I still learn from him. But yeah, it was just, I don't know, I really enjoy practicing ancestral skills and singing and doing ceremony and, you know, taking time out in nature by yourself and, yeah, all the things that we know that we greatly benefit from.
Yeah, and that are like probably the solution to a lot of the problems that we have in today's society. Like,
yeah,
like you say, you can go out and light as many fires as you want, but like, most people are probably missing a connection or, you know, some kind of human. The things like singing and dancing and ceremony. Where's ceremony gone? Like, you know?
I know. But it's so understandable that we have like such a uncomfortable relationship with it when, you know, most of our experiences with ceremony is through the Catholic Church.
Oh yeah, here we go. Let's go.
Right. Glad we're in the forest because we can both stay calm.
So, right, you hit on something there, which is very interesting to me, of like religion, because like, we can say what we want about religion. Obviously the Catholic Church is not amazing, you know what I mean? And its track record is fairly shit, like. But religion did provide something for people in terms of like community.
Absolutely.
And ceremony, even if it wasn't like necessarily what we might view now as you know, wholesome or whatever, but there's definitely something there in terms of like giving people a faith and giving people
absolutely
a community and a place to go. And even like the likes of confession, of just being able to go in and fucking offload your shit to somebody, you know. And like, of course a Catholic priest is not the ideal person to be telling your woes to, but that concept is valuable.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, it even makes me think about like the military, you know, like giving that sense of like kinship with other men, like feeling that belonging to a group, you know, like that's really like ultimately what we're all seeking is like belonging and meaning to our life.
Absolutely.
Blackbird just alarmed at us. Yeah, so like for me, I find that in nature and in community in nature, So it's like my dream to have a rewilding community where people would, be welcomed like they're welcomed in church, you know, like coming into a natural environment with each other and with the more than human world as well, because we're never alone when we're out here, you know, we've just seen the blackbird. And
that we are a part of this, like, you know, we're not separate from the natural world.
Such a crucial understanding, isn't it?
Yeah, like, it's so easy. And I've found, like, in the ancestral skills type of things that I've done, and, you know, fire drills and all that type of stuff, it gives you a deeper appreciation and an understanding for, you know, what we've achieved as a species. And like, you know, you go home and you click your Bic lighter to light the gas stove, and after doing a weekend in the woods, it's like, wow, how amazing is that?
Completely.
You know,
like, as a species, how creative and adaptable we are.
But it's so important that we don't lose contact with this part of ourselves, you know. And like, even psychologically, I would say it's crucial that we maintain it, because that's, I feel like that's where a lot of the sickness, like the epidemics of depression and anxiety and all of that stuff, is like, nature can help with all of those things, you know.
I mean, even being out here, it's like the trees, the plants are releasing these pheromones, which are beneficial to our health and our mood, and it's like, it's not there to replace medication for those that need medication, it's like, as a baseline, you know, like, that we should all have free access to this, like, all the time, and to these skills, which are like our ancestral heritage, you know.
Absolutely.
Imagine the cultural paradigm shift.
I think it could happen. Like, I think there is a shift going on. Like, even like we were talking about plant medicines earlier on, like the shift of people like searching out that type of thing. The growth of like forest bathing, and the amount of people that I see in the fucking park now when I go out. You know, on a Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You see families out enjoying the beach or enjoying the park, and like, there's definitely a push towards, people are seeking those things, because we don't just want to be, Lucy is staring into the mud at a track right now.
I don't know if there's any.
What have we got?
I don't, we've got a lot of squirrel feeding sign, but it's a bit of a washout in the park at the moment, really.
Amazing.
They're going wild. Look how much they're just, obviously, it's
are these all from squirrel nibbles?
Yeah,
nibbled away. Wow, that's cool.
And it's so cute.
Yeah.
So, like, squirrels are notoriously messy eaters.
Okay.
So they'll, you know, you can see here, there's loads of pine cones have been nibbled, all the scales everywhere. That's whereas so if it's cool. Like a mouse or a vole, they'll really, like,
they'll
nibble.
Like cleanly nipped off.
Not like the straggliness.
Wow.
But obviously sitting up there and chucking down the cones when they're done.
Amazing.
Sometimes if you're here, you get one on the head. Just like, blessing from the squirrel.
This is heaven for them in here.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting one as well. Like, this is deciduous woodlands, you know, and like, people think that Ireland is this amazing green place, which it is, like, but
for a reason.
Yeah. And we look at like the forests that we see, you know, any forests that have been, you know, planted in the last fucking 100 years have been tightly knit coniferous forests that are like essentially poisoning the land, if I'm not mistaken.
Sorry, there's some squirrel tracks.
Oh,
there.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I was chatting about this, the podcast I was doing the other day with somebody from the States, and, you know, they're trying to build up a picture of what Ireland looks like, and obviously here in this, like, green Ireland and the Emerald Isle, and I'm like, yeah, because it's really intensively farmed. But then, like, obviously these thick spruce plantations and how, like, terrible they are for biodiversity.
Yeah.
But, like, the places that have, like in the Phoenix Park where we are now, you know, there's these old semi-natural woodlands that are a mix of deciduous and conifer. The only reason this is here, like, because of the past history of it being like a royal hunting park, you know, and so many of the parks that have this kind of like continuous forestry cover are because they were protected because they were used for hunting in the past, you know, so it's
monuments of oppression.
Yeah, exactly.
In a way, it's strange,
but it's great to see now so many people aware of like the effects of citrus spruce plantations and really calling for a change to
and
them.
And is there a movement for this? Because I get so worried about it. I see, like if we want to enact change in you're talking like 50, 100 years down. If we start now, maybe in 50 or 100 years, you know, those people will be able to enjoy like nice natural Irish woodland as it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Not Scots pine or not like these other trees that are non-natives, you know?
Yeah.
So is there a big movement going on for this stuff?
I mean, I've seen so many different petitions and I know that there's like small pockets of movements to like plant native trees. And even Caoilte like coming out and saying that they're going to start planting broadleaf deciduous, but it's still with like timber in mind, you know.
It's still a cash crop, essentially.
Yeah. So we're still going to walk into a woodland and see straight lines, which is like,
and it won't
not what you want to see.
Yeah. And it's not designed for people to enjoy, you know.
Yeah. Just like nature for nature's sake, you know. I don't know, to answer your question, there's definitely a lot more public awareness of it, and I'm sure there are amazing projects happening out there to kind of turn the wave.
Yeah, it's just such a long road, you know. It won't be in our lifetime, but the thing that we can do is protect the places that we have already.
This
is incredible, you know.
It's just like, I don't know, it doesn't feel like enough, like, you know. Like so many people have such anxiety over like where we're headed in such a short space of time. Like it feels like it keeps getting shorter and shorter of we've got 5 years, like we've got 2 years. You hear all these different reports.
Yeah, like 60 harvests left in the soil now.
Yeah, and that's so beautiful. It's just a little, it's like a glimmer of hope, this little sapling coming through the leaves.
Sapling. Hold in there, buddy.
But I mean, what needs to change is like people's attitudes, you know, and it's not just about planting trees. Yes, that's great, but it's like, you know, if we need like this cultural shift in, as we were talking about, like recognizing yourself as part of nature and why you're doing it, which can't happen in a capitalist system, you know.
Yeah, or it can, but it just needs to be like, the focus needs to be taken away from profit at all costs. I think, you know, this is like checks and measures to be put on corporations, or corporations to put checks and measures on themselves, which is probably a lofty thing to expect. But
we've got some,
what have we got here?
We've got some wood bluets. Amazing colour, aren't they?
Edible?
They are, if they are extremely well cooked. Yeah, you can cook them up. Some people get like gastric upset from them, but they're quite easy to identify with that really strong violet colour.
Wow,
take
amazing.
A few for the pot. You want to grab that one?
Are you going to eat them?
Yeah, I'll cook them up later. My friend, I'm going to her friend's house for dinner, so she'll expect something.
So Lucy's got a basket of full of nettles and a couple of those mushrooms. What else have you got in there?
Oh, just my scarf and the lovely smoke stick that you've given me.
you run forest school here.
Yeah.
For kids. What age?
So from 4 to 16.
Amazing.
Really?
So that's where the change can happen, is if we get them young.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's both kind of inspiring and heartbreaking to hear our youth talk about the future of the planet and us as a species, because what they hear in the media is like humans are the problem.
Yeah.
So that's like what I hear a lot is, you know, them saying like we're evil and it's our fault and humans should just be wiped off the planet.
It's like an anti-human movement.
To them being told like we've only got 10 years before the like temperature rises and you know, I hear like the earth's gonna explode, and I just like, for me it's like I have trouble sleeping, so for a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old it's really intense. But having said all of that, like they're so much in touch with nature still, like it's incredible. Like they can come out here, they will teach you so much about the plants and the animals in here, and they're so like, particularly when we like I love teaching and sharing wildlife tracking.
Yeah.
And a big part of wildlife tracking is like holding the question.
Okay.
So rather than just like seeing a track on the ground and saying, oh, that's a fox, you know, like I know what it is. It's like you really have to slow down and observe what you see and gather all of the evidence. Like they call it the origin of science. You gather all of the evidence.
Mm.
And then from that, you start to ask more questions like, okay, well, where is this animal now? Like, what does this animal eat? Like, what does it need? So like holding the question is something that I feel like we've become increasingly, we find it really hard to do because people want to have answers, right?
Yeah.
They don't want to like look like they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're like teaching wildlife tracking to kids, it's about, you know, holding that question, like thinking up more creative solutions, which is ultimately what we need for the world that we're in today.
Yeah.
You know,
amazing.
So yeah, they're the future generations, like,
yeah.
And we have to do our part, but
I think it's incredible like that you're doing this with kids. I think this is really gonna like impart some change, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's such a huge movement in Ireland. Like the forest school movement is amazing. There's amazing people doing it from all
more of them around.
Oh, there's loads.
Really?
Yeah, there's about, I think there's close to 200 people. Wow. Have been trained now, and I suppose there's close to 60 schools around the country, and from people like all different backgrounds. So you could have like school teachers or Montessori teachers or yoga instructors or artists or
wow.
rangers or whatever. So it's like this really eclectic like ecosystem
cool.
of people that are then sharing this, and the network is so supportive. Like it really values collaboration over competition, and people just want to like reach out to each other and lift each other up. And
that's fucking awesome.
Yeah, no, it's great. Like it's so good. And
I didn't know there was that big of a movement here. That's incredible.
Yeah, no, it's really class. And there's that, and then there's all the other amazing people like doing work with children that isn't just like forest school ethos, you know. So yeah, there's definitely a groundswell, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And how do you find the kids respond, like when they, obviously they probably love it. I know, like when I was a kid, Jesus, sitting in a classroom was the last fucking thing I wanted to do.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And being out running around the forest and exploring, and
yeah,
it's probably the most valuable education I could have got, you know, so I can only assume that they love it.
They do.
The majority of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that's appealing to it for young people and parents is like, it's not just tailored to suit one learning style, you know. There's like, well, one of our principles is that it's child-led, and there's a huge emphasis on play, and that it's more of like we're mentoring them rather than like authoritarian teaching.
Awesome.
So there's place for like directed learning in but that we want them to learn through experience. So you know, we're standing at the lake here.
Yeah.
They might come down and they're learning loads about like water and physics. And then they're learning about like the ecosystem of the lake. They're learning about what animals and plants like to live here. They're taking risks, you know, for like a lot of kids. You know, there's a steep bank if you're 4 or 5 or you're going into water. You're not quite sure how deep it is. How do you figure out how deep it is? You might find a stick and put that in. So it's like this real place-based learning that's led by them. And that's gotta be better, right?
Absolutely. And like learning them, teaching them to push their own boundaries a little bit rather than being like always told how far they can go.
Absolutely.
Or, you know,
because that's like, you know, we're talking about another principle is that like you're encouraging them to take like supported risk.
Yeah.
So like recognizing the dangers of like risk being absent in our lives as young people. So if we aren't shown and supported to take these risks as a kid, like to build that resilience, what's going to happen is you're going to reach your teenage years and be like, well, I'm going to take risks in loads of other like much more dangerous ways.
Because you haven't learned how to effectively push your boundaries and know where your limits are.
Absolutely. Or learn about like consent or any of that. What that is.
Awesome. The name, I wrote it down here because I can never remember the name. your teacher. She has a strange name. What's her
Links
name?
Links Building.
Yes, Links Building. So I was doing a bit of creeping on you, a bit of research.
Research, yeah, yeah, that's the word. Yeah.
You did a, was it 4 months?
Yeah.
Stone Age immersion?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, tell me about that. I'm intrigued about this.
So Lynx, she does like 1 week long basic skills classes. So yeah. I'd gone to a couple of those, once in Ireland and once in Jokkmokk, which is a small Sami town in Sapmi, so northern Sweden in Sami territory. So then, yeah, God, it was like last May, she did a month long class in Les Aisies, which is in the Dordogne region of France. So it's like your neighbours with Font de Gomme and Lascaux and all of these really famous caves with Amazing. The cave art. So we spent 1 month there, living in a big kind of cavey overhang thing. And then after that, I went for 3 months up to this Sami region again, and we spent 3 months there.
Wow.
So like being there was about learning the skills and being in community and learning from the land there. Mm. So, you know, we're learning about how to tan hides, make clothes, make baskets, make glues. It's kind of like experimental archaeology, but yeah. with more singing and ceremony and dancing. And
sounds incredible. Yeah.
So that was 4 months last year, and then I'm going to the States next year for 3 months to work for her.
Wow.
And at the end of that, there'll be a Stone Age project. So she hasn't done a Stone Age project in a while, and a Stone Age project is living for a month just entirely with everything you've made.
Wow.
So just out on the land, you've foraged all your food, we'll hunt, we're dressed in all of our tanned clothes, we'll be making shelters along the way, like we'll be transient, you know, we're walking
Incredible.
From the Pacific Ocean up into the mountains.
Oh God.
So yeah.
Somebody's filming this, aren't
they? Did you see our documentary?
No.
There's a documentary about it. I think there's a couple. There's a French one and another one.
Do you know the name?
No, I think if you just look on YouTube for Links Building, you'll find it. But yeah, there was somebody came on a project and made a film for her.
Wow, amazing.
And that kind of exploded her name. Yeah.
So to differentiate between like bushcraft, which is, you know, you might be using metal tools and knives
yeah.
and bringing like hammocks with you or bringing stuff with you. The Stone Age thing is more like no steel tools, I assume, or
yeah.
So
yeah.
You're making your sharp cutting edges from rock and
from flint, from slate, from bone.
So
from
it
antler.
Really is like primitive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but like then, you know, because there's a big movement like called primitive skills, but uh-huh. I'm like, these aren't primitive,
yeah, exactly.
you know, and nor yeah. are the people that practice, like still practice these skills, you know, because
yeah.
a lot of this is like indigenous skill set as well. So, as well as being like the shared skill base of our ancestors and where we came from as well.
Yeah, and how like one thing unlocks another thing, like,
yeah.
like when you can have a sharp cutting edge, then that can like unlock your ability to
yeah
you know tan hides or whatever it may be.
You see the networks, you know, like
yeah.
it's like that mycelium network. It's like you see how it all links together.
Incredible.
You know, you need to know how to track like all of our ancestors, you know. There was somebody who was a really successful tracker,
yeah,
you know, because they brought home the food, and somebody who was there, like bands of people who were amazing foragers, you know. This is all we had, like
yeah.
And that was all we needed, because we can go home and flick that Bic lighter now, you know,
yeah.
like those skills were so important in getting us to where we are now. But
yes.
also like there's such value in practicing them again to remember that and appreciate that.
Absolutely. You know, have you read Tribe, you know, Johan, is it Johan Harari?
Uh-huh.
There's a quote in it, and it's like humans are most happy when they're an essential part of a small group struggling for survival. You know, and this is like the whole thing of, he talks about the Blitzkrieg in London and different times of like New Orleans when the catastrophe happened, and all of a sudden people are thrown back into these
yeah.
tribal settings where your skill sets become really important, you know?
Yeah.
So like one
yeah.
person can cook and another person's like able-bodied enough to go out and collect water, and like everybody's useful in some way
yeah
and are like nobody's amazing at everything, but
yeah, that's
like everybody has a place.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that's being eroded.
Absolutely.
In modern society as well, it's like
you're replaceable.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody is like
by a
conveyor
machine.
Belt. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And like commoditized, consumerized. You know.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's back to that belonging, you know.
Wow. And like, would you say that was a spiritual experience for you? It must have been.
Oh, like yeah. Entirely, you know, and it really healed my relationship with ceremony and what ceremony can look like when it's like one, you know, you're not just stealing from another culture
yeah.
to satisfy your own spiritual hunger. It's like we were creating ceremony together, figuring it out together
wow.
in really basic things, you know. It was
yeah.
like we killed an animal for our food. So it was like, okay, how are we going to honor the life of this animal? And that ceremony was around like our Thanksgiving, like our singing, our like abstinence from eating meat for a couple of days before, like our sort of conscious stepping into that. And then afterwards using every single part, you know, like
amazing.
From the meat for food to the intestines for bowstrings and sewing, and like the stomachs for tanning, like the sinew for sewing, the
yeah.
fat for rendering for our lamps. Like you really start to appreciate everything.
Amazing.
So much more. And it's so sad, you know, like I tan now and it's just so many, many skins are wasted. And
yeah.
you know, this huge movement of like veganism. And it's like, for me, it's just about sourcing like
yes.
good healthy meat
mm-hmm.
and honoring the animal like Absolutely. By using every part of it.
I love it.
But it's hard for people to access that now, you know, like,
but isn't that funny that we're so disconnected from like the process of like harvesting an animal and like treating it with respect and using every part of it, that it's so repulsive to people. Like
yeah.
it's kind of funny that the act of like killing an animal and eating it is like this repulsive thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And at the same time, those same people will go to a supermarket and like buy boxed up meat and plastic in bulk, you
yeah.
know, but they'll still be repulsed by seeing an animal being killed.
Yeah,
you know. And it's
yeah.
it's like, kind of such a paradox. It's
absolutely
strange.
And also, like, I was thinking about this a lot during the willow weaving class that I was on, you know, like willow was woven as a functional thing in Irish society because we didn't have plastic cardboard.
Yeah.
And people maybe couldn't afford brass. So it was like, that was what you got if you had very little money.
Yeah.
And it was a functional thing that we use in our day-to-day lives. But like now it's like the poorest people in our society, you know, they're the ones that can't make those choices to like
yeah.
go out and buy something ethically sourced or like, you know, get access to skills to know how to weave a basket or like have the time to
it's
do
so
any
true.
Of those things. Like I like teaching foraging because it's like, yeah, okay, it's free food. Why isn't everybody doing it? But it's like, if you're, yeah, working flat out to try and afford
yeah.
rent in Dublin, like how are you going to have time to come out and listen to me talk about nettles? You know, so it's
yeah.
like that's this huge shift for like such a huge percentage of our society needs to happen.
I think that realizing that it's actually like an essential thing for us and treating it as a practice like that.
Yeah.
Like coming out here and maybe listening to you talking about nettles and foraging around is maybe going to be the highlight of your week, you know, for a lot of people. Or maybe like the best thing that you can do for your mental health and your physical health in that week, you know.
Yeah.
But shifting the perspective and understanding that is the hard part, rather than sitting down watching Netflix and eating a chicken curry, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Which is like fine too sometimes.
Yeah, no, it is fine. Yeah, and that's another thing, is that like I suppose a lot of people like looking at this movement of primitive skills or like ancestral health or whatever it may be,
yeah.
they picture people like wanting to go and live in the woods and like throw off the whole thing of modern society and, you know, that you're some kind of
yeah.
weird people
hate
that
technology.
Want to live in the woods and be
yeah.
off grid.
Yeah.
Whereas like there's so many amazing trappings to society and we're never gonna get away from that.
Yeah.
But there can be a balance, I think. Like I think there can be a a scenario where we have it all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, absolutely. Like one thing that I've heard that I would say a lot to people is we're looking to the past for solutions to the future, you know?
Yeah.
Like we lived this way for millennia without destroying the planet.
Exactly.
And it's like this tiny little window of time with the Industrial Revolution,
yeah,
with agriculture, that we've like depleted so much of the Earth's resources. But it's like, okay, we know how to live another way,
mm,
where there is potential for more egalitarian society.
Yeah.
But 100%. Yeah. Oh, gotta have hope.
I'm optimistic. I feel like there is hope, you know what I mean? But
yeah,
I understand that it's getting thinner.
Yeah, well, we gotta have hope, yeah, like, or at least just to make it fun.
Well, that's
in the
what's
meantime.
Driven us all these that's what's got us through, isn't it? Faith.
Yeah.
You know, hope and faith.
Yeah, and play.
yeah. I wanna get into the rites of passage.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I would love to talk about this. So
yeah,
you run rites of passage for, it's just for girls at the moment?
So this is the very first one. This is the pilot, and it's a 9-month program. So it's for young women aged 11 to 15 at the moment.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
explain to me what a rite of passage is.
Oh, gosh, good question. Well, the rites of passage are a way to mark transitions in life.
Yes.
And they're a very ancient practice, and there's something that we would do better not to forget, really. So the rites of passage happen for transitions from childhood into adulthood. They happen from like moving into elderhood. They happen at birth. People, you know, marriage is a rite of passage. Essentially, like all of our Christian sacraments could be considered rites of passage.
Yeah.
So in the absence of that, and with the huge mistrust in the Catholic Church and people moving away from that community, we're seeking to develop an alternative which is still spiritual but not associated to any kind of religious organization.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well done. That was a good explanation. So what I suppose what inspired you to
Jesus,
embark on that kind of
my own experience of being a young woman in Ireland, in the north of Ireland, and just the amount of unnecessary pain, this deafening silence of no information around, like, you know, it's not just about like sex and gender, but like everything, like how do I say no, how do I say yes, how do I map out like my life, where do I look for mentors, like that real kind of, I needed something to tell me and someone and a community essentially to tell me that what I was going through was recognized, was valid, and like help me transition into a different part of my life. But I didn't have that, so I sought to initiate myself through drugs, through alcohol, through sex, through self-harm. You know, it's like you're looking for this thing to mark something.
Yeah.
So yeah, like my own experience, and it's something that I've wanted to offer for years.
Amazing.
It was just, I did my own rite of passage this year, marking my own transition into womanhood at 29.
Amazing.
And that was like 4 days in a cave without any food. And then most importantly, like being welcomed back by a community. So there was a group of us doing it.
Amazing.
So yeah, that really was like, okay, now I'm as ready as I can be. And you just kind of have to trust that what you're offering is welcome and what the world needs.
Yeah.
And also like to really hope that it inspires other people to do the same.
Yeah. I feel like there's a hunger in the world for this stuff. And I think that the likes of people going to do, you know, these epic like Spartan races and to do like all of these like challenges, that this is people trying to fill that gap in their life that's been left for, like, because I suppose a rite of passage is an initiation, right, and like there's some kind of challenge involved in it usually.
Yeah.
So you going and sitting in a cave and fasting for 4 days is like, you know, you've got to deal with your whatever comes up while you're there, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the challenge, and you come back from it and you've been initiated, I suppose, and that marks a growth phase in your life.
Yeah.
And like people don't go through that anymore, where it's just like, oh, you you know.
This feels different.
That's why we have
different.
So many adults that are still children, you know, in a lot of ways.
And traumatized children at that. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, the hope is that, like, you know, down the line, this is a pilot and we want to see this being offered to all genders and for adults as well and for all these different transitions that people are ready to mark in their lives, you know.
Amazing. I'm so excited to hear how it goes because I, like, would love to do something similar with young boys. Like, I've looked at, even with men, I think, the same. But, like, if we can get them young, you know.
Yeah.
We can make change.
Hopefully.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're a legend.
That was awesome.
Lenny, I know. I was like, I just want to keep talking.
You
so.
Can do it again. Resonant. Yeah. Resonant. Dialogue. Resonant. Dialogue. Resonant.
Boom. And that was Lucy O'Hagan. Wildawake.ie is our website. At Wildawake Ireland on Instagram. Go check her out. Follow her stuff. She's doing amazing work. Do check out some of her up and coming courses, which are available for everybody, adults, children, etc. The next one is on the 12th of December, and that is prehistoric lighting techniques. So I assume making cool torches and different ways to use primitive lighting techniques. It's so cool that these are happening right in the center of Dublin. Other courses that she's doing are animal tracking, wild food foraging, and lots of other stuff. So go check all of that out on her website, and you can book in for those events through her website. And thank you so much to Lucy. It was a great chat, and I would love to do it again and get into some more specifics maybe, which would be awesome. And as always, so thankful to my man, Dejaculate, for that awesome tune. Such an amazing gift from the brother. So thank you so much. DJACKULATE on Instagram. Go follow him. Another Irish hero. So thank you so much. Have a great day. Smash it. And if you feel the urge, it would be awesome to like, share, leave reviews, etc. All that stuff really helps. If you're listening on Spotify, sharing the Instagram stories is a really easy and helpful way to spread the word. Thank you so much. Much blessings.